Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Life, Love, Marriage, Divorce, the podcast. I'm your host, Monique Davis-Dodson, and I am extremely excited to have a very special guest with me today. She happens to be my daughter, Sinead Dodson. Welcome to the show, Sinead.
Hi.
Sinead happens to be my middle daughter. She is also known as my twin. Everyone says we look alike. She's a student athlete at the University of Oklahoma, where she was awarded a full scholarship to play volleyball. Unfortunately, Sinead, before she went to the University of Oklahoma, she graduated in May and went directly to college within like a week and a half because she had to start summer school and just getting acclimated to play volleyball. She tore her labrum and she had surgery in February. And one of the reasons I asked Sinead to join me at the mic is because I thought that she could share valuable advice to anyone who had to overcome something like a surgery and work hard and have dedication and all the things that she went through. You know, a lot of times athletes make it look so easy, you know, but they go through a lot to get their body prepared to play their particular sport, as not just physically, but it's a lot of mental and emotional work that is involved behind the scenes. And, you know, being a parent of four athletes, being married to an athlete and seeing what they go through, thought it was really good to invite her to share some of her experience with all of you today. So, Sinead, let's start with, why did you pick the University of Oklahoma to, you know, when they offered you a scholarship? What was it about the University of Oklahoma that was like, hey, I think I can see myself here?
My recruiting process started when I was a freshman in high school.
Which was crazy.
Yeah. You're like 14, 15, talking to coaches and, like, trying to figure out where you think you belong. And obviously, when you're that young, it can be hard to figure out what's important and what you want to do with your life and what you want to major in. So it's not just volleyball, it's also where can you fit school-wise and organization-wise and what they have to offer. So that was really important for me to look into. And I committed to Oklahoma my sophomore year of high school. I'd been talking to a lot of schools and I took my visits, and it sounds cliche, but, like, everyone says, you know, you're going to have a feeling. You're going to feel some type of way when you step, like, you'll know. And when I went to Oklahoma and visited for the first time, like, it was really evident to me that I could see myself not just being an athlete there, but also being a student. Mm-hmm. Because one of my coaches, Kara Pratt, told me, like, make sure you choose somewhere that you're not just going to be an athlete. Because, God forbid, but if you get hurt, can you see yourself just being able to still be happy there?
That was some of the best advice I think she had given. And I pass that along to a lot of our friends or to people who come up to me and now ask me about, you know, you guys and how you're athletes and what about what goes with this step and what to expect. And, you know, you were really close with another university that mm-hmm. you were going to choose. And, you know, because at the time, and this happens, you know, in the real world, at the time, the coach who offered you at University of Oklahoma, he was let go. So that happens sometimes, you know. So you guys, if you are in this process where your kid is definitely going to play next level sports, post high school and in college, you have to think about all of those things. And you had three schools, your top three schools that you had
Should
considered.
I talk about them?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a secret.
So when it came down to decision time, I was choosing between LSU, Oregon, and Oklahoma. I visited LSU and that feeling wasn't there. Then I visited Oregon, and a lot of people know, especially you, that's where I was like, okay, this might be it. When I visited Oregon, I loved it. I liked the coaches. the main factor when it came to decide between Oregon and Oklahoma was the coach that I was closest to was the assistant coach at the time. Mm-hmm. And also, I remember when I was going on visits, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, if it feels right, then distance, like, it doesn't really matter. But traveling to Eugene, Oregon, and seeing how much it took to get there, that's when I finally realized I might be a little family-oriented, because I was like, all my games are going to be on the West Coast. Like, everything's going to be so far, and my family won't be able to come to a lot of games. Also,
oh, before you were like, I'm getting out of here.
Before I was like, I'm going as far as I can. So that was another big thing, the distance. Like I said, the big thing that Kara had talked to me about, I didn't just see that. I was like, if something were to happen to me in Eugene, Oregon, then I don't think I would be content just being that far away from home. Obviously, for me, I did feel like if I would have gone to Oregon, that would have challenged me a lot. He would have, or the coaches would have taken me out of my comfort zone, and I felt like I could grow there as a player, because if you guys know volleyball, Oregon is a historically good school at volleyball. Mm-hmm. They make it to the tournament. They do get in the Pac-12, and they're very consistent. As opposed to Oklahoma, the past few years, they haven't been that consistent. They haven't been making it to the tournament. And I felt that I could make a difference and make a name for myself going to a school and starting something for that organization again.
Just kind of restarting that program, because it was a little dormant for a while, but you felt like...
I felt like I could
make a difference.
I could make a difference.
You could make a difference.
And I mean, I feel that regardless where I went, I would have made a difference, but I knew some of the girls that were already on the team, and I was just like, I'm not saying I want to take it upon myself to do it, but I want to be a part of Oklahoma volleyball being a big volleyball name school again. Like,
so, because you knew some of the girls, because you played again, well, you were familiar with them from club volleyball, mm-hmm. and a lot of those girls came out of the Dallas area with the TAV, which was one of the top clubs in Dallas.
And then...
And then,
from sophomore year, know the coach... I know the plan for the team, very comfortable.
Yeah.
And my senior year of high school, was it senior year? Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, senior year of high school.
Yeah.
The volleyball coach for the University of Oklahoma.
Was let go,
yeah. Or he left. And so that was, 2-3 weeks of not knowing who the new coach was going to be, not knowing who was going to come in, not knowing if they're going to honor the commits, they're going to change things. So, obviously, I was very nervous.
Yeah.
Because coaches, they don't have to honor the recruits from the other coaches. Mm-hmm. So, if this coach wanted to say, sayonara, then I'd be out of there.
You're back on the market to find out where you want to go. If you could go there, because a lot of scholarships were already offered. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was lucky because the current coach, Lindsay Gray Walton, she was assistant coach for Kentucky before, and she had talked to me while she was at Kentucky. So I already had some sort of relationship with her.
And you were on her radar.
And I was on her radar from when she was at Kentucky.
Which was a blessing.
Everything comes full circle, because I never would have thought.
Yeah, that was a blessing. And I would say this, in her short amount of time, which is 2 years, she was able to turn the program around, because Oklahoma volleyball was like
bottom last
of the Big 12.
In the past 2 years, we tied for third, and then this year we solely were third.
Third place, mm-hmm. and invited to the NCAA.
Yeah.
Volleyball tournament as a freshman. I mean, that's a big to do. You know, some people go through their whole collegiate career and they never make it to the tournament.
Yeah. I think that's part of it that hasn't dawned on me.
I don't think it's dawned on you yet.
Because I know, it is a big deal to go to the tournament, but I just feel like that's something you're supposed to do. I feel like that's...
I feel you. I understand. I mean, that's the competitive edge that you have, that's not like a big to do. But when you think about where the program was for several years and they hadn't, that is really a big to-do. On top of that, you know, you battled to get back to the court because you had surgery, torn labrum, and, you know, you were kind of sidelined for quite a while. How was that for you? Because you never had surgery before. Just go through that whole process.
Yeah, I had never had surgery before, so I was not fully prepared for what it was going to take to get back to mm-hmm. being on the court.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because a lot of people say, like, well, once you have surgery, you might get to 99%, but you're never going to be 100% like you were before.
Mm-hmm.
And I had surgery January 18th of 2019, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And got cleared, what, June?
June, yeah, like June 1st.
Or like May, like end of May.
It was June 1st.
Yeah.
And then you reported like June the 5th or 6th.
Yeah.
Right.
So from that point on, I was with my trainer a lot, doing recovery stuff, doing rehab, doing weights. And when I got cleared initially, I went to Houston Junior as my club and had a private with Kara because I remember I was like, okay, the doctor says I'm good to go. I can just start swinging again.
No, you weren't supposed to be swinging
again.
Yeah,
and I had no idea. I had no idea.
He said, okay, the doctor was like, you can start some of the, you know, activity that you were doing, right? But you weren't supposed to be swinging. You were supposed to just be passing.
No, he said I could pass. He said I could start swinging. He said I could start swinging, but I don't think he meant just go and try to crush a ball.
And your brain was like,
and
I was
like, okay, yeah, I can just start dancing. Yeah. And I remember I went and tried to hit a ball, and I was like, what? I was like, this does not feel right. And so I was like, oh gosh, maybe it didn't work. I was like, not again. And so then I got to college and I was put on a return to play program.
And what is return to play?
Basically, it just slowly eases you back into getting back onto the court. So everything I did mm-hmm. was controlled reps, either 20% swing power, or I only get 10 balls a day, working mm-hmm. on range of motion, working on throwing.
Slowly working yourself yeah. back to that in light parentheses. 100%, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
And everything in the weight room I had was modified when it came to upper body stuff, just mm-hmm. to make sure that I was being safe. So everyone was really good about that. But personally, I'm not a patient person. And I was like, why?
No, she's
not. Why is this taking so long and why am I not back to where I want to be?
You were going to find out real soon, weren't you?
Yep. And so, I remember we did a bunch of preseason stuff, bunch of practicing, bunch of scrimmaging, and practice. I was like, oh, my shoulder feels good. When my trainer finally gave me the A-OK to 100% swinging, everything was good. Everything was perfect. And I remember we had a tournament in Colorado, and, like, that's when I was playing, mm-hmm. and everything was going well. And there was some little part, I could feel like a pin needle in my shoulder, and I was like, mm-hmm. like, what is this?
Yeah.
I was like, maybe it's not, maybe it's something, but it did not feel right. And I don't know what it was, if I hit the ball weird, if I did something to aggravate my shoulder, or if it was just too fast, too much too fast.
Because that was a long tournament, and you had not really played to that level prior to surgery, right?
Yeah.
So your body was probably like, hey, what is she doing? Because you're all in, right?
Mm-hmm. And after that tournament, my shoulder locked up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, swinging in practice. It was day-to-day activity. When I was trying to go to sleep, my shoulder was hurting. When I would try to reach behind my back, my shoulder was hurting.
Yeah.
And I broke down in practice, and I was like, I don't know why this is happening to me. I was like, I don't know what I did. I was like, I missed my 18th season because I had surgery.
Yeah.
And so that was hard. You know, the last time the whole gang's back together. The last time you're going to play with all the people that I grew up playing with. And then I finally get back to being on the court. And it was like, just like that.
It was hard. because you were extremely competitive and it hurt not being able to do something that you love and that you're really good at and not understanding the whys to it. And I think that is, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, I post things on Facebook and I'm always extremely proud of my kids, but there is a lot of behind the scenes that us parents who happen to be parents of athletes know what it takes for them to perform at such a young age that they deal with some things sometimes, you know, in a resilient but a quiet way. And like I said, one of the reasons I wanted to have you, you know, on the show is because the show is about how do we overcome? How can we encourage others once we reach that place? And, you know, I'm sitting here with you and just reminiscing. It was really hurtful to your heart, even to talk about it today. But I think what's so important is to just to be real and raw, because the thing about it, everything does happen for a reason. You know what I'm saying? And you were able to take that pain and continue to press on. When that happened, when that shoulder locked up, because it sidelined you for about 7 weeks.
I had a lot of scar tissue and my shoulder was just stuck. It was frozen. So after that, we did a lot.
How much pain was that?
I am honestly going to say, because I remember talking to my coaches about it, I'm like, whatever this is, It was nothing compared to my labrum. When my labrum was torn, I would say it felt loose, it was popping a lot, and it would throb every now and then. When my shoulder was stuck and frozen this past season, every little movement felt like something was tearing.
Yeah.
Like, I told my team, I was like, I feel like there's fire in my shoulder every time I tried to move it.
Yeah.
Almost like when there's so much tension in a rubber band or something, it just felt so tight, it didn't want me to move.
It wouldn't move. I mean, we did some, you know, I had her send me a video of how tight it was. But I remember in one of your coaches said, or you also said, you know, he's like, Mom, I could not throw, you know, how you throw those the balls into the stands with the fans. Mm-hmm. You couldn't throw it.
Yeah.
And people don't know that. And you were still playing. How do you get to that level of, I'm having difficulty just throwing this ball into the stand, but I'm still going to get out here and contribute to the team? How do you do that?
What's all you talk about? Like, you realize, like, it's bigger than just yourself. And for me, I remember I was, like, sitting one day, and I was just like, well, I had been, like, sad about it. And obviously, that, like, takes a toll on a person to not be able to do something that you've done
for so many years.
Like, I've played volleyball since I was 9.
Yeah.
And I'm 19 now, and I was like, what if this is, like...
So that goes through your mind as an athlete. Like, what if this is it? I made it this far, and I'm not going to complete the dream.
Yeah, and it's just, like, hard to kind of think about. And you're already in college playing a sport.
Away from home for the first year.
Meeting all these new people. And college sports are a whole nother beast, a whole nother level of intensity. Of when people say it's literally all day, it's all day. Practice, your days are, like, 27 hours, like...
It's only 24 hours in a day.
You can never get enough
sleep. So you got extra hours added on? Okay.
And so on top of all of that, then to be hit with, like, a disadvantage, and especially when, like I said, like, I was like, oh, yeah, like, this is it. Like, Colorado, like, I was like, finally I'm back doing what I've always done. And then just, like, it literally felt like I'd been hit by, like, a bag of bricks. Like, I was like, dang.
Yeah.
And I remember I was just sitting and I'd go through weeks like, why is this happening to me? After a while, like, I just was like, it's not why is this happening to me. Like, it needs to be like, what is this teaching me?
I love that. Oh, you're such your mother's child.
So, like... So, I went from, why is this happening to me? From, like, pitying myself and, like, feeling bad for myself, and flipped it around to, instead of, why is this happening to me? Into, what is this teaching me? And, like, what is the bigger picture? Because, like, now, like, everyone's like, oh, more than an athlete, more than an athlete. I had to, like, think more about, like, what else am I besides just a volleyball player, just an athlete?
Mm-hmm. So, really, because that is this thing that I see with the shirts and everything and the slogan of more than an athlete. Mm-hmm. So, you're saying for the first time, you knew that mm-hmm. you had other interests outside of volleyball. But when you're forced to kind of be still and you're like, what is this teaching me? It gave you, from what I'm receiving, is that it gave you more time to figure out what is it? What if this is it? If this is it, God, I know it's not, but I'm feeling some kind of way, right? And I can speak for you, mm-hmm. right? I'm feeling some kind of way. You know my heart, and you know how hard I work, and you know how much I love it. But if this is teaching me something, and I'm supposed to learn exactly what more than an athlete means, then explain it to me or help me to understand. So that's where you were in that process, right? When you mm-hmm. were being still. Not satisfied with that. You're shaking your head. You got to tell people what you...
Nope, not satisfied.
Not satisfied, but would have accepted it if that was it. Mm-hmm. Okay. But deep in your soul, you knew it wasn't.
Oh,
yeah. Right. So when you had to answer the question, more than an athlete, what are you?
I will say, through that whole experience and like through that whole little rut that I was in, because I would say like I was in a funk, yeah. like, because it's hard.
Yeah. And because you're very, very competitive. And once you had, you know, I don't know. I mean, for my listeners, she was highly recruited, had every accolade that you can, you know, receive a lot of individual honors. We do understand that it is a team sport and she couldn't get any of it without having a good team and great teammates to help her and push her. But you excelled in the sport. And to know that, hey, I'm here to contribute and then feel stuck and can't do it, this child of mine internalizes that, and she takes it, you know, serious, and she takes it personally because she's never satisfied. And I would say all, none of them are, but since we're just talking to Sine, she's never satisfied with being mediocre and just average. I mean, I've never allowed them to think that. So it's, you know, very difficult to even... You being faithful, because you know your mom is very spiritual and we believe in God, it was still challenging for you during that time. But when you got to the place of, okay, I am more than an athlete, how did you define exactly what you were?
I think, and like, honestly, like, obviously, you guys know my mom's a Christian, she preaches it like all the time, but like, that is probably when my faith grew a lot more. One of my teammates, Keaton Kinley, she has some medical issues too. She's had surgery like 2 times. Like, she's been through a lot.
Yeah.
And she's very, very committed to telling her story and like telling people about her relationship with God. And she's always very passionate about her relationship with Jesus, and I think being around someone like that also helped me get through what I was going through.
because she's walked your walk. Because I do believe that, you know, when you say, what is this teaching me, God? And during that time, and, you know, because I'm behind scenes and I'm encouraging you, but I know that it's still different because you're there and I'm here, you know. And you're going through the motions. But with someone like Keaton, who has gone through surgery, who has played in pain, and to know the Lord the way she knows the Lord, and to be able to encourage you because she's an upperclassman, how good God is, even through all of that adversity for her, to be Big 12 libero twice, two times in a row for Big 12, is a testament of her faith. And she was a transfer at that. That says a lot. You know what I'm saying? And so I can see why that could be very encouraging to you. So during that time of you being still, you had to come to really, really develop a relationship with God in your faith, you know, individually, just outside of, you know, what we do. And I've always said this to you, and I share this with a lot of people, mainly when I'm talking about my kids. And I've always told you guys that it is my job to introduce you to Christ. But it was your job to develop a relationship with him. I'm happy to hear that you did have to go through that journey so that you can get stronger. So when you decided that, okay, God, I'm putting all my trust in you, what happened, like that light bulb or that connection, and you were like, okay, I'm not going back to that place of, okay, if this is it? Because in your soul, you said that you knew it wasn't, but you still asked the questions like most people, you know, like, why is this happening to me? You know, what is it? What, you know, I'm supposed to learn something, but I already went through that part of my life. Shouldn't we be past that, God? You know, the realness of having a real relationship with the Lord. So when you got past the why to the what am I supposed to learn? What happened? Because your arm, you were still battling through that soreness and that tightness in the shoulder. So what happened?
I would say I made a commitment to just change my energy, because even if I couldn't contribute physically on the court, I could contribute in other ways to my team.
Right.
So I think that played a big role. And when I finally started to get looser in my shoulder and gain more mobility back, I was taking extra reps, doing what I can, like just like the small things that people tell you to do that you don't really think make that big of a difference.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Anyway.
Yeah, we can stay on this one for a light bulb moment. You, all those things that people have told you. But anyways, it's good. Everybody have to learn on their own.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I know everyone says you have to warm up well. You have to stretch before you start. But, like, I was like, okay, whatever. You don't need to do all that stuff. Like,
yeah, yoga.
Like, it's not, like, come on. Like, I had to dedicate into, like, buying all, putting everything on the, like, mm-hmm. What is it? I was all in.
You were all in. You were all into everything.
Yeah, instead of just going through the motions, I decided to just be all in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm someone, I feel like if you completely sell out and buy into something, then you're going to see results rather than just like going through the motions, like I said. So I decided to do what I could when it comes to rehab, extra time with my trainer, extra reps with my coaches. I had a specific routine when it came to warming up,
mm-hmm.
specific stretches that I did. I would see my trainer at least 4 times a week, and then we'd stretch before and after practice. Just little things that you don't think will make a difference, but they do.
Oh, okay.
So I think I had to learn
on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You need to learn.
Because people can tell you things,
mm-hmm.
and people can try to instruct you, but sometimes you have to go through things on your own to fully understand.
That is true.
So
we understand that now, though, right?
Yeah, we understand.
Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. And so you do all of the extra. You get back on the court.
You do all the extra. Well, yeah, you do all the extra. And sometimes you're still going to struggle, but you know that it's working.
It's getting better.
Improving. And so, like I said before, I'm not a very patient person. Mm-hmm. So I think I have to learn patience this year because I'm someone that just wants immediate actions. Like, I know I'm someone that has never been physically not able to do something.
Yeah.
So when I heard I was cleared, when I was ready to go.
You're like, okay.
I'm like, okay, perfect.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you're good to go, but just not all the way yet.
Yeah.
And
you couldn't understand that. You didn't know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm someone, I get frustrated with myself easily when I can't do something. And I know my coaches, especially like even not just my coach, but like, I've had expectations for myself. So to not be in a place where I could achieve those.
Because you felt limited physically. And you had these expectations and these on your to-do list, on your vision board, as they say. And to be restricted, it was challenging.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, obviously, no one's to let people down, but, like, for my team and stuff and for my coaches, I was like,
dang. You were taking it personally that you felt in your brain that you were letting people down when you were not. You were not, because you had to get better in order to produce. And the thing about it is, and I think this is good for like incoming people who may have experienced some kind of injury and they're like, okay, I'm coming in, I'm going to contribute and it's all in, it's just going to be better and we're going uphill from here. And then you have a pause in, you know, in that plan for a particular reason. Be it that you need to learn patience, be it that you needed to, you know, really trust God, be it that you needed to be all in to do the extra, for whatever those life lessons were to challenge you and to help you improve. It was obviously, it was a necessary part of your journey, but you were taking it in a different way because you were like, I don't want to let anybody down. I'm here to help. But if you are restricted, you can help in a way that you wanted to. But really, you know, the reason I say that you were helping is because when people can see you put in the work, they gain respect for you. When they see that you want to be there or they know the type of teammate that they have or the coach knows what kind of player that they have, you really are still a valuable part of the team. I mean, maybe you couldn't see that then, but can you see it now?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like I said, like, I think it was really important for me to realize that even though I couldn't help my team in one way, I could help them in another way.
And so you were able to come back and, you know, you've been able to really contribute physically the way that you would want to.
I think the game that I came back in was, I think, the first time we played Texas Tech. Like, and my coaches subbed me in, and that was the first time that I...
You felt pretty good.
I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I was basically back on the court for the most part, playing the second half of Big 12.
Yeah, and so that's a testament to learning all of the necessary tools that were valuable.
And even after that, even getting on the court, it still wasn't what I wanted to, I wasn't producing the way that I wanted to produce. So like now you're on the court and you're playing D1 college volleyball now.
Mm-hmm.
And your shoulder's still bothering you every now and then, but you're on the court, so you better make something happen. You better produce. You got to do what you got to do. And there were games where I didn't, and it was hard for me to still, like, take that in, but it's all learning.
Mm-hmm.
And
but do you think that that helps in some aspect of the game? Let's say that, because you're still coming back from, you know, being injured, right? So maybe the swing isn't exactly the way you were used to it, right? Because you're still building and strength in that area, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you're working on another part of your game, be it maybe defensively. Do you feel like you were able to get better defensively because you restricted a little bit with the swinging motion?
I think definitely other parts of my game got better.
Mm-hmm.
Blocking wise,
yeah,
I think I definitely became a better blocker.
Mm-hmm. So you were contributing to the team,
mm-hmm,
still. And there, this is what I'm bringing this to some of my parents and, you know, some of the players who are out here listening. Learning how to challenge yourself and go through adversity and accepting all of the blessings, the little tokens of blessings that are happening along the way, you can't ignore those because you were in a place where I need to be here when you needed to be exactly where you were, because a lot of times, you know, when we are trying to learn patience, right, it is so that you can be not only patient, but present. And a lot of times we aren't present in the moment when we have this vision board and all these goals and we just go through it. And then when it's over, you don't remember anything that actually happened. You know, you got to watch film to say, oh, that really happened. Oh, I really did that, right? But in this journey, it allowed you to be patient enough to see your growth. And you were still having difficulties seeing the growth because you were still wanting to be, oh, I'm supposed to be over here when you were supposed to be right there. And so while I'm saying this, you know, because you're getting a lot of stuff, a lot of valuable life lessons that some people will never get in their lifetime, you know, and you're 19 years old. Right. So you're going to be ahead of the curve. Like I'm almost 50. So some of the stuff that we more mature people, we get later is because we've been living our life so fast speed and we're just been going that now in life, I know for myself, I'm enjoying life a lot more now because I'm more present in it, you know, and so you were able to get that. So that you can be more of a more valuable to your team than you probably actually realize. So you came back and you played the second half of the Big 12 season with your team. You guys end up third in Big 12 in the conference. You make it into the NCAA volleyball tournament. Because it's only 64 teams that make it, right? And it's like, how many teams? Lord, it's a bunch of them, right? Mm-hmm. it's a lot. I don't even know how many.
I don't know the number,
but it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And only 64 make it.
Yeah.
And you guys, so when you guys did the watch party, how was that? How was that experience?
It's exciting, the only way you make the tournament for sure is if you win your conference. So, like, you get an automatic bid if you win your conference. So, like, out of the Big 12, Texas got an automatic bid. So
that's the only way you know you're going.
You know for sure if you win your whole conference.
Okay.
So, we had a pretty good feeling that we would make it, but, like, you don't know. Until your name is called on the TV.
So you don't know until your name is called, period. You're just like, okay, we might. So if you're thinking to yourself, we might have a good chance, and they don't call your name, and you're at the watch party, oh, my Lord.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of teams that were on the brink, like Cal out of the Pac-12, like they're a team that you think probably would have made it. But you really have no idea until your name's called on the TV. And so we're watching. We're looking, and we had a pretty good chance, or we thought that if we make it, we're going to be in the A&M region. We're probably going to end by A&M. So when we saw A&M's name go on the TV, we're like, okay, guys, this should be it. You know, this will probably be it. We'll see what happens. So it's A&M versus St. John's,
mm-hmm,
and then our name's called Oklahoma versus Rice, and
so you go crazy.
You go crazy. Because you, out of all the volleyball teams in the world, or out of all the D1 volleyball teams, You're top 64.
You're top 64 in the nation.
Which, like I said in the beginning, like, to me, that's somewhere that we should be.
Yeah.
Regardless.
That you're saying that we are...
We are a tournament team.
We're a tournament team. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's not like, oh...
Like, it's exciting, but it should be
it's
our standard.
It's kind of like what I said.
I think it should be expected.
It should be expected. Like, I expect you to clean your room.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's expected. Like, so, do I get this? No, you don't get a prize because it's expected of you to do. That's what I'm saying. So, I get it. I'm with you. I agree with you 100%. But that's been our mindset and our family has always been that way. Like, okay, but you were supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, hey, I got an A, but you were supposed to get an A. What were we supposed to get? What, a D?
Which is why I think the whole experience of the season hit me so hard because what is expected of me personally is to always go above and beyond.
Exactly.
And so to not be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because even though I knew I had surgery, like, I knew I was going to have to go through rehab, I was like, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once that's over with, I'm just going to...
I'm going to fly right through
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. And to be met with a wall in between where I want to be and where I am,
yeah,
that forced me to stop and really think and figure out there. It's not just one way to get to where you need to be. And I think... So... We went to the tournament. We lost to Rice in the first round, which was hard to really go through. And then the next week is finals week, and we had, like, our meetings with our coaches before we went back home. And I talked to my coaches, and I was just honest, and I just told them, they asked me, like, how I thought my season went, and I was like, oh, I'm not gonna lie, it was hard to think you're gonna do something and not achieve or not meet your own expectations of yourself. Like, that's hard. And one of my coaches was like, stop me. And he was like, Sinead, you do realize when you first got here, you couldn't even throw a volleyball. Like, you weren't allowed to hit when you first got here.
Right.
And you went from that to becoming a starter, to going to the tournament your freshman year, to being back on the court. Like, that.
In less than a year.
He's like, that is huge.
Yeah.
And I kind of just stood there and I was like, oh, wait, like, that is true. Like, when I first got here, I couldn't. Because I completely forgot. I swear I forgot that I had surgery this year. like, because when I got to Oklahoma, I could barely lift a kettlebell.
Oh, I know.
I couldn't do anything.
You're not telling. I know.
So.
Yeah.
I think to hear someone
else say it besides your mom.
Okay, come on. You know when your mom talks to you, it's not... It's kind of like, oh, it's my baby. Da, da. So, like,
no.
It's one thing to hear my mom say it, but to hear my coach say, like, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself because you didn't meet your expectations.
You should be proud
of yourself.
You should be
proud.
Because you did.
Yeah, because of where you are now.
Where you started and where you are now.
And it was really big to me to hear my coach say, like, just because... Like, everyone, your path is going to look different from other people's.
Mm-hmm. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you're supposed to be. And that was your life lesson that you needed so that when you go back, sophomore year is like, you know, everything and more. You needed this part of your journey to be a part of your story. Right? And your coach is right. And I'm going to tell you this. And you, like I said, you're getting something that some people will never get in a lifetime. Everything, and I preach this to a lot of people, and you probably heard me say this to you. And I'm going to say this because it might help somebody out there. When you are asking God for something, and He knows the true desires of your heart, He listens and He's hearing everything that you ask for. And when you believe Him, He will deliver. Now, it may not come in a pretty package the way you want it to come, with a big old red bow and everything is perfect. But it's going to come the way it needs to come because that gift that you'll get will be a permanent, eternal gift. Something that you can reach back on and say, oh, but by the grace of God. That some people will never understand that when you are speaking to the little girls that I watch when you, after the games and you guys are signing autographs, that person that you'll be able to connect with that story, can change your life. Most importantly, your own.
Yeah, and that's something, like, when I was, like, really down on myself about this, I was like, I have the ability to literally share my story.
Yeah.
Like, share, like, what I went through, and, like, I got through it. So yeah. You can do it, too.
Yeah.
And I think that was really that was a big part of this all, too. Knowing that, like, I could help other people go through what I go through.
Give them advice,
give them insight.
Right.
Talk to people about it. So, I think that was really big.
And so, overall, now that you can look at the big picture of being more than an athlete, right? Now that you get to look at this big picture, do you realize, like you said before, that it's more than volleyball?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And can you look at it now and see that it was all worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I thank you. I think you gave some really great insight about just being able to be strong and to be real. You know, it is okay to ask the questions why or wonder, but you don't stay there because you had a choice. You can wallow in the what ifs, or you can say, what am I supposed to learn from this in order to get better? And you chose the latter. And I'm looking at somebody. Yes, I'm your mom, and I tell you how proud I am of you, but I'm also very, very honest in it. Not telling you something that, you know, I want you to hear because I want to make you feel good. But it is a great accomplishment to be able to continue to pursue your dreams. And I'm happy because I get to witness it. Because I think you're amazing and I think you're great and I love you and I'm so proud of you. And I thank you for sharing your story and being a great encouragement to somebody out there who has a child or even, you know, an athlete such as yourself who's going through it. Go through every emotion. Take them all in. Acknowledge them. Don't try to suppress or hide them. Be as real as you can. But don't let that stop you in pursuing your goals, your dreams, and whatever you choose to achieve. Most importantly, remaining faithful. What advice can you give someone who maybe is going through some of the emotion and the feeling, you know, that you felt? What advice can you give them?
I would say, like, as cliche as it sounds, everything truly does happen for a reason. And everything you go through is a learning moment. Like, obviously, my freshman season did not go how I wanted it to go, but I think it went how I needed it to go.
Yeah.
So I could learn more about myself,
mm-hmm,
as a person and as an athlete. And you can always, you could dwell on the negative, and you could just think about where you are and how it's not where you want to be, or you can commit to making a change. And it sounds, I say from experience, it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But once you're all in and you commit to something, that's like the first step of making a literally like life-changing decision.
That's powerful. And on that, we are going to end. I want to thank you, my beautiful daughter. I'm extremely proud of you. I look forward to next year, and I look forward to continuing watching you grow and mature as not just an athlete, but as a person. And I couldn't be prouder. And as we move forward into 2020, guys, she said that I saved the best for last. She is my last interview for 2019. I look forward to you guys joining me in 2020, a new decade. I can't wait to see what God has in store for all of us I'll be back on January the 7th as we bring in 2020. Once again, I want to thank my beautiful daughter for sitting at the mic with me. I hope that you guys were inspired by her testimony and her story. I know that I sure am, and I'm so proud. And I thank you, my beautiful daughter, and Boomer.
Sooner, and y'all better come to the games next season.
Yeah, it's on.
It's on.